This is George Fisher, your CBS Radio motion picture editor and Hollywood reporter, recording the last second news and views of Hollywood today. First, my confidential Hollywood letter to a movie fan, Betty Bishop, Stockton, California. Dear Betty, yes, I did attend that fabulous party given by millionaire Hal Hayes, and it is undoubtedly the craziest house you've ever seen. Hayes calls it the House of Tomorrow, and I would guess it's about 100 years in the future. I drove up to the address north of the Strip in Hollywood. An attendant took my car and asked me to wait for a limousine to take me up to the house. We drove up a hill 200 yards straight up, mounted a long stairway, and entered the house through a tunnel that came out into a winding swimming pool. Another stairway went up over the pool to the second level. Stairways are suspended steel. On this level was the living room, small kitchen, bedroom, and bath in the living room. The fireplace was in the center of the room. The glass-top table had a tree growing up and through it. Greenery, flowers, and orchids popped out of every corner of the room. And the floor rug continued on up the side of the wall, which when lowered exposed an entire glass wall. Going up to the next floor, again by suspended iron bridge, was a little more difficult for the ladies, who held tightly to their skirts so as not to expose themselves to the crowd below. On this level, Ted Fiorito's orchestra played, and on the next level, a roof garden terrace, followed by still another level in a huge canopy-covered roof garden holding perhaps 200 people, go down one more level to another roof garden, dance floor and tables to accommodate possibly another 100. Just figure this, too, with every kind of bar situated throughout the house. Los Angeles and Santa Monica fall right into your view, since you are now about 1,000 feet in the air. All the doors are glass, and the flowers and shrubbery that surround the house are also within the house everywhere. Among the notable guests, all of whom wondered how and why they were invited, for none of them knew the host, including Howard Duff, arm-in-arm with Gussie Moran, Duff does not in the least intend to reconcile with Ida Lupino. Boozumy Denise Darcel was obviously present and noisy. Colleen Gray and her new husband, Pamela and James Mason, Nora Hames dividing her time between the two fellows who escorted her, Scott Brady and Bob Eaton, her estranged husband's attorney, who borrowed Lieutenant Governor Goodwin Knight's car to take Nora, only to discover that she also had a date with Scott, Lieutenant Governor Eaton's father-in-law. I saw Beatsy Wynn, ex-wife of Keenan Wynn, scrambling about dateless, Marilyn and Ed Hitton, who did most of the inviting for Hayes, John Payne and Sandra Curtis, the gal he's going to marry next month, Pat and Arthur Lake, Janet and Bobby Weisel, young millionaires. Greg Boutzer, Charlton and Lydia Heston came in late. Ann Miller and Bill O'Connor, her steady boyfriend. Ginny Sims stood around at the bar most of the evening. Nikki Hilton with a couple of good-lookers and Mona Freeman, who apparently wasn't with Hilton. Marjorie Weaver and her husband Don Briggs. Dorothy and Harry Jameson, the Beverly Hills spenders, who finally found someone who could go them one better. And the press was out in full force, all dizzily gadding about the place, with Luella and Jimmy McHugh planning their Del Mar vacation this week, with Jimmy opening at Del Mar Hotel on Thursday. That's my confidential letter to a movie fan, Miss Betty Bishop, Stockton, California, signed confidentially yours, George Fisher. Now, if you'd like a confidential letter about Hollywood or a movie star, send me a postcard or letter, George Fisher, Columbia Square, Hollywood 28. Gosh, I don't know how long I've been harping on the fatality list of Hollywood actors and stars who win Oscar awards. Even though it is the highest honor Hollywood can bestow upon an actor, even though it is internationally publicized and creates the greatest furore once yearly, I personally disapprove of Oscar and the manner in which he is judged, presented, and awarded. Mind you, this is all very personal. For one thing, I abhor what is been done to the actor who has never been able to overcome the jinx of winning an Oscar. And if you don't think there's a jinx, listen to this. Louise Reiner, Paul Muni, James Dunn, Katina Paxinaw, Gail Sundegaard, Celeste Holm, Mercedes McCambridge, just to mention those I can recall who won Oscars for star and supporting performance. And to my knowledge, neither one ever made another picture or made only one or two before fading from the Hollywood spotlight. What is the reason? Well, one reason I personally know about. A star who wins an Oscar immediately has a salary hike, almost double. Because he's an Oscar winner, his agent doesn't believe he should take any part for less than double or triple his former salary. And unless it's a part that is again likely to win him an Oscar or nomination, his agent as a rule passes the part. This is all very silly. In the case of Louise Reiner, who won 2 awards and never made another picture, who knows what happened? But in the case of James Dunn, Hollywood should be highly criticized. A great personality, a great actor. Dunn was hustled to the sidelines after winning For A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. True, he's made lots of money in independent deals and is a must on top TV shows. Still, Hollywood lost a lot when it lost James Dunn. Perhaps someday Hollywood producers whose heads are in the sands much of the time will awaken to the fact that they have a great actor and star in their own backyard who knows as much or more about the movie business than they do. Mercedes McCambridge is an Oscar winner who made only one or two minor movies after winning, and she doesn't consider the Oscar a jinx, although for the life of me, I'll never know why. She's just that way. Mercedes says it's increased her salary, but what does she get paid for? Radio and TV don't pay those movie salaries. Yes, the Oscar is a jinx, in my opinion, to many stars, but certainly not to the top established stars. But I could name, for an hour, the actors who have never won and who continue to be the top reigning stars of Hollywood today. Well, as I predicted, Joanne Gilbert is a smash success at Charlie Morrison's Mocambo. I personally did not regard her show as great as her last appearance, but her name is now magic at the nightclub, and lovely Joanne apparently can do no wrong. Tonight, the greatest master of ceremonies in show business moves into the spotlight at Gilmore Field to present and entertain with the top showman of Hollywood for the Cancer Benefit Fund. He's Georgie Jessel. And Bob Cobb, president of the Derby and Stars Baseball Club, originated the plan for the big show tonight. And Jessel, I can tell you, will be at his best. I accompanied Georgie to St. Louis, Minneapolis, in the last 6 weeks, and watched him perform on stage at the Aquatennial in St. Louis, Muni Opera Season. And he's the greatest person to watch you could ever imagine, sparking and chewing up scenery as fast as he smokes those big, lousy cigars. FDR named him Toastmaster General of the United States, and no man was better titled than Georgie Jessel. Georgie averages about 3 benefits a week, travels by plane to every part of the country at least once a week, and is as busy with benefits as he is with his girlfriends from coast to coast. On the East Coast, Godfrey's charmer, Marion Marlowe, is his Tootsie Pie. Just burns the dickens out of Godfrey, I don't know why. While on the West Coast, Tommy Adams is the apple of his eye, and she burns every time she hears the name Marion Marlowe. But you ought to watch him perform at Gilmore Field about 7 tonight, and get there early. I don't know how you're going to get there. Actually, you're so far away. Here's a movie review. Gentlemen prefer blondes, and apparently no gentleman would bypass Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell without reasonably inhaling his breath. In this movie, it is very evident why Miss Monroe and Miss Russell were immediately regarded as the best leads for this pleasant nonsense. Figuratively speaking, they've got just what it takes, and neither hesitates to display their wares to the best of their ability. And just because they fall far short of the acting assignment doesn't matter in the least. The story of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, as devised in the 20s by Miss Anita Loos, doesn't appear in the present movie, except rudimentarily. But there is an enthusiasm given by Marilyn and Jane that makes one think they must have at least been trained at Minsky's Burlesque. One good guess as to why the story was yanked out of the 20s to the present day would be that in the 20s, our ladies of fashion were gowned in flower sacks. Today, they're gowned in bikini bathing suits and dresses of a similar nature that look more attractive on the Mrs. Monroe and Russell than most other people. Charles Coburn, Tommy Noonan, and Elliot Reed make fairly neat foils for the fantastic female goings-on as provided by the bouncy and hip-throwing Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell, who remind you frequently of what happens at a penny peep show. Now some Hollywood whispers. Alec Guinness, who brings dollars to Britain faster than the Marshall Plan, is teamed with Yvonne DiCarlo in The Captain's Paradise. And you know, Ken Hansen unveiled a Miss Norway, a real Nordic beauty, at his Midsummer's Eve party at Scandia the other night. Further revealed her engagement to columnist Bertil Unger, Swedish correspondent. That's Hollywood Today. This is your Hollywood reporter and CBS Radio motion picture editor, George Fisher, transcribing over the CBS Radio Network.